You're listening to the Flasco Oncopod, brought to you by the Florida Society of Clinical Oncology, the voice of oncology in Florida.
Hello, everyone. So welcome to this new episode of, Flasco, podcast, series, Voices in Colorectal Cancer. This is the episode 3. And today we're going to be talking a little bit more about what's going on beyond, the infusion, chair, for our patients with colorectal cancer. Thiago Biaggi, medical oncologist, Moffitt Cancer Center. And I have a big team with me today here. We have Zilipa Cruz, Vanessa Zepuveda, and Charlotte Martin. And welcome you all. Thanks for joining for this episode. So I think the idea today actually is to discuss, all this, care, surrounding, our patients with, colorectal cancer. We discussed in the previous episode, the rise in young onset, colorectal cancer, patients. And I'm just curious if this is something that you also see in your institutions. I think I will go ahead and get started with you, Zilipa.
Sure. Thank you for having me on this podcast. I definitely agree when we look at our cancer data and just working with our registry or even with working with our navigators, such as Vanessa, who you'll hear from later on, we definitely have seen a younger population being diagnosed and coming into our colorectal cancer institute. And with the younger population, of course, brings on different barriers, different opportunities, different education, as well as reaching them. So we can definitely say that our statistics line up not only with the state of Florida for a younger population, but also for the U.S. in the effects of colorectal cancer.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you mentioned, this, challenges, beyond the cancer. Vanessa, how you guys manage, this in, in your institution? Because we know that, these patients, they need way more than, chemo, radiation, and surgery, right? So sometimes, they're responsible for the families and they might face financial, toxicities, with the cancer, fertility issues, sexual dysfunction. I struggle, sometimes with, in my institution, we just set up a fertility, service, for not in our institution, but at least we have a program that can, refer these patients outside, for fertility preservation, for example. But how you guys manage this in your institution, I think I'll pick you, Vanessa.
Thank you. And thank you for the invitation, actually. So yes, very good question. So, when we are meeting a patient and we're doing our assessment as nurse navigator, trying to assess for barriers to care, that is depending on the age of the patient, obviously, we're going to be talking about fertility issues. And with that being said, we are looking and we are tapping into community resources that we can actually refer the patient to. Right now, we don't have a specialist, within our system, but we do have resources within the community that actually can help us, fill that gap there. It is a topic that we have to make sure that we cover with our patients because it does have an impact on the patient. And sometimes they're not thinking about it when they're getting, when they're getting diagnosed. The first thought that they're having is, am I going to be getting a colostomy? Within all the education that we provide to the patients, we as navigator, we make sure that that component of fertility, also within the financial impact and also the personal image, all of those, we actually touch base with the patient as well. But we depend a lot on resources within our community, and we are always updating and trying to make sure, sure that we have actually the latest information to provide them.
Yeah, and I think the role of navigator is very, very critical here. And we just created a group here in MAPA, focused on young onset, GI cancers, and we got some funding, for a navigator, etc. And I feel like we usually have this, for example, for our patients with rectal cancer. This is very, very hard sometimes, and we have to sometimes, explore things patient who wants to get surgery here, but, this patient lives a couple hours from Moffitt, so he wants to get radiation there, but he want to, stay connected with us as oncologists. So it's really hard to be on top of everything. And speaking about, getting, treatments, out of our center, Charlotte, I was talking to a company recently. They got like a new drug approved, like immunotherapy, subcutaneous approved. And then we started like talking about, well, okay, so maybe we can, develop like, projects, maybe with, subcutaneous injections at home. And I know that we have, centers, here in Florida, for example, trying to develop, treatments and keeping those patients in a hotel, for example, out of the hospital after like cell therapies, et cetera. And of course, we have a lot of patients like getting like oral, therapies. And I feel like this is the future, for oncology. I mean, that's good, for our patients. They don't need to come, to our center, to get infusions. But sometimes really hard to, really, navigate this. So sometimes we don't know when this patient started, taking, this, fruquintinib or regorafenib or whatever. What kind of toxicity this patient is, is facing now, and how you guys manage this in your institution? So do you have a way to kind of, track those patients getting treatment, outside? How you navigate this in your institution?
Yeah, so thank you for inviting me out. I can talk a little bit about our program. Our program is pretty progressive with our pharmacists. So we have our pharmacists that will monitor all our oral chemo patients. They fall into our queue within Epic, and then we kind of follow them through and we kind of become another kind of navigator for the patient and just an advocate for them, especially if they're young and, if there's just on capecitabine, they're still in the in the early stage setting, then there's a lot of things we got to work through. And we're kind of, they're going back to work, but then they're on oxaliplatin and there's cold-induced neuropathy and they're a waiter and they're trying to work through those things. So we often get involved in a lot of different things. So it's definitely a challenge with a lot of the oral chemos. I think a lot of patients often think that the IV chemo is the harder stuff, but oftentimes the oral chemo is where they can kind of be hit hard. So we kind of monitor them pretty closely along with to help the providers. It kind of make sure we follow them at least every week, make sure they start on time for fruquintinib. Are we making sure that blood pressure is being controlled, getting their primary involved? So many different specialties end up being involved for these patients. I think it's super important that we have a care with everybody involved to try and help these patients. It's definitely complex when you add in oral agents.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you mentioned this. And usually, actually, this is the time, when they start, using those, TKIs, that, disease has gotten worse, and they, they have like more cancer symptoms, et cetera. And and we had this conversation here before. Like, it's hard sometimes, to convince, let's put it that way, young patients or young people to, get screened for colorectal cancer because they don't want to stay, off work like for 2 days to get a colonoscopy, for example. So I mean, it's hard to think, what all those changes they're gonna face in their lives, if they're, using those drugs and all those appointments, blood work, et cetera. So it should be, really, tough for them. Imagine, keep in mind that sometimes they are responsible for, financially responsible, for taking care of their families and everything. So it's definitely something hard. Zilipa, I think like something that we've done here that, I mean, I feel like it helped, sometimes our patients, young onset, colorectal cancer patients, like having them as a part of a group, right? So we do have like many, supportive groups, online, et cetera. They can always, look, Facebook or any social media, look for those, kind of groups. Sometimes really hard to kind of trust the information, putting there, put there, like, a lot of, unproven, drugs there, et cetera. Now we have a lot of sometimes, politics involved, et cetera. Do you have, something, in your institution, kind of, supportive groups or ways to kind of connect these patients to other, patients in the same situation?
Yeah, we do. So similar to like what you described, we have support groups here at Orlando Health Cancer Institute through our integrative medicine department that is tied to our cancer institute. And it's interesting that you use the word convincing, because we just added that as our fourth pillar to navigation. We were like, we're the communicators, the educators, the advocators, and now we realize we're the convincers as well. And so a lot of times it's being proactive about their needs, similar to what Vanessa said. Day one, they don't know what they're going to need by day two or even by day 15 or 20, right? And so our integrative medicine, we have support groups that are disease specific. But one of the things that we identified as a large barrier was adolescents and young adults. So we only treat adults, but that 18, or you have, this cancer at a young age, specifically like we're talking about colorectal cancer. So how do we tie them in to even knowing that we know that that's information overload when they're diagnosed, they're learning about their treatment plan. If they're going to be on an oral oncolytic, now they're the administrator. And so we've really tried to be creative and really not only customize our education, but customize our education along the cancer continuum of when we tell them about it. And so the navigators are really pristine on not only just assessing for barriers of care, but letting them know, hey, we have a support group. And I know I met you, your last clinic visit, and you got a lot of information. And now you're coming back before we start treatment. What do you think about signing up for this support group? This is what it has to offer. You're going to meet other people that are around your same age, particularly the young adult and adolescent. And we've seen some good progress and success in that, especially making it hybrid. When you're thinking about this younger population, like Charlotte mentioned, a lot of them are working with cancer, not just living with it. And so, how do we meet the needs for them to be able to either come in person or have that opportunity to attend virtually, especially when they're on these treatment plans and you think about TKIs, nausea, vomiting, the fatigue. And so coming to have one more visit or coming here to have one more, support group and coming to the Cancer Institute is not always conducive. And so how do we meet the needs and have it virtual as well?
Yeah, that's great. And I felt like I noticed, I knew that, but I noticed for the first time that the real power of supportive groups when I realized that my patients were like getting together and becoming friends in my waiting room, right? Because I treat like very kind of a specific niche of cancers, and those patients are there waiting to see me, and then unfortunately like 20% probably of our patients are young, younger than 50. And sometimes they start getting together, so they become friends. Oh, hey, I know the patient XYZ. Actually, we're going out like next week because we had the same cancer. And it's interesting, the kind of impact, that having someone leaving and going through the same hard time that you're going through now, can impact. Vanessa, back to you. When we set up our young onset and group here, and we realized that all needs that we have for for this young patients, and I have to confess, sometimes I feel really bad if I if I leave the room and then I realize, wow, I forgot to talk about fertility, so this might be important for this patient, or sexual health or something like that. We understand that maybe it would be nice to have someone, kind of a touching base, base with these patients before the appointment. So when they come to see us, we kind of know, what kind of a needs they have. How you guys manage this in your institution?
We do an assessment prior of the patient coming into our institution, so we can assess the potential needs that they may have, and this is one of them. This is why we kind of like try to make sure that we know our patient before it's coming through our doors. That way we can put resources in place and be able to have a effective consultation with the patient. Our goal basically is to make sure that we create a relationship with this patient. That way the patient has the it's secure, feels good with us, is a very sensitive topic. But once we build that relationship with the patient, we can actually assess for all the needs that they're going to be having. At the beginning, like with anything else, fertility is a very touchy, subject for them. But once we start having the conversations, then they understand that we are part of their team. We are here for them. They start opening up, and then we can start, you know, exchanging ideas, communication. We explain what the doctors are saying, because when they come in, they're overloaded with all this information. We try to make it as simple as possible, and we are always reassessing. Always reassessing. Are you understanding the information? What are the barriers that you think that I can help you with? You know, and sometimes even the word barriers, they don't know what that is. They don't understand what's going on. So we're like, we go into specifics. What about financially? What about emotionally? All of those things as a navigator, we touch that not one time, only when we meet the patient. That goes through the continuum of the care. So yeah, we need to make sure that we create that relationship with the patient so the communication is actually effective and we can help them better.
And yeah, and we keep saying, like, you know, the patient, do you have some kind of resource, you know, for family for this? Because this is the kind of situation that, you know, family gets sick, right? So I can't imagine how hard it is for, like, a young patient with, you know, colon cancer, like, responsible for his family, and then you know, they have kids and they have to go back home and say, hey, you know, dad is going to, you know, lose his hair now because I'm getting chemotherapy. This is, you know, it's insane to think about all of this. What kind of a support or what kind of a recommendation you have for those families?
We sit down with them, and we have counselors and support groups that are actually you know, family oriented as well. You know, we always talk about the patient, but it's true. It's not only the patient, it's the whole family that is going to be affected. So we try to make them part of the care of that patient. Obviously, if the patient allows us, which sometimes at the beginning, they don't want to, you know, they don't want anybody else to know what's going on with them. But we are always encouraging them, you know, they are your support as well. So, you know, the you integrating them into your care is actually going to be more power to you. So we do have resources for the patient and also for the family so they can cope with the situation that is happening at this particular time. Because it's not going to be something that is going to get fixed tomorrow. So it's a process. So as we engage them all in this process, we can actually move forward and provide the best support that we can.
And we have a caregiver support group as well, mm-hmm. to Vanessa's point. And so we found a lot of success in that. Even if the person that you are taking care of doesn't have the same type of cancer, to your point, there is power in just being with like people that are going through the same situation and understanding that, oh, this is another wife like myself that is taking care of her husband, who's the main breadwinner that is facing cancer. And so we've seen that there's a bond that forms with those caregivers of just, no one else in my family, no one else in my circle is going through this, but I found counsel and consult in this complete stranger who's going through it as well.
Oh, that was awesome. I mean, I really want to say thank you for, you know, for being, you know, here with me today, but also want to say thank you for taking care of all our patients with cancer here in Florida. So it's definitely, you know, a multidisciplinary, you know, care, that this is exactly what those patients need. We kept saying, like, young onset patients, of course, this is something that, you know, we can be easily extrapolated, you know, for patients with, you know, any age. So GI cancers are, you know, really hard to treat, and colorectal cancer especially is really hard to treat. Unfortunately, we're seeing this rising, you know, incidence. Unfortunately, it's a situation that we have, like, screening procedures, and we're not doing a great job with, you know, screening. As I always say, we don't really know why we're seeing this, you know, rising young onset, but we have many theories, you know, trying to explain this. But short answer is, if we have many theories, it's because we don't know. Right. So we definitely, you know, have a lot of work ahead, but thank you so much for all you're doing, you know, for our patients here in the Florida state. And thanks for being here with me today.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Really a big testament, like you said, to the multidisciplinary, you know, to recognize Charlotte and her team, and like she was stating with the oral oncolytics, the volume of colorectal and GI cancer. It's hard as the navigator to navigate the patients on IV, much less oral. And so there's kind of like this weight lifted off as a nurse navigator when they are on an oral oncolytic, because we know that our pharmacy team is just so robust and having protocols of setting up those phone calls with patients. So it's a true testament. It takes all of us being at the table, from the physician to the pharmacist to the nurse navigator, to really get these patients through the cancer continuum. And especially when we look at colorectal cancer, we know timeliness. And so really that time from diagnosis to treatment.
Absolutely. And Charlotte, I have to say, we're going to keep you busier and busier because all those next approvals will be oral, probably.
I Thank
Thank you
you.
so much. Appreciate it. Bye.
Thank you
Thank
all.
you. Bye-bye.